Patty, first of all, the decision by the Presbytery of Chicago to sell the camp to a Grand Rapids developer, it's their land. They can do what they wish, but certainly there were those who were saying maybe they sort of rushed into this decision and didn't really wait for all offers to come in.
Well, we are very disappointed, obviously. First of all, the fact that, you know, as a children's camp or a camp for many children from the inner city as well as children from all over the Midwest, it's been there for more than 100 years. I know many families who have come back generations over, and it's been known as a place where people can see the outdoors, live in it, literally experience it, and oftentimes they would bring children from the inner city who have never experienced a sand dune, let alone touched a Great Lake. So we're very sad about that. Gary, it's not totally over yet. We're hopeful that there may be the ability for some other things to occur at this point in time. Nothing's in the works, though, so I can't really talk about that, but we are hopeful that there might be the possibility that some part of that property could remain as a camp.
It almost seems very similar to what's going on with the northern part of the Denison property involving Singapore Dunes LLC. A developer wants to build that up, but yet until it's built up, the battle is still not over yet.
You have said it very well.
All right. But do you feel, and I'm not talking about you, but those who are trying to keep the dunes as they are, the David Swans and the like, do you feel a little frustrated that right now sort of things are not falling into place and sort of there's more setbacks than triumphs right now?
Well, we have had more setbacks in preserving our dune land, which is very, very important to the West Michigan economy. It's not only important to the Saugatuck area economy, it's important to the Grand Rapids economy. Grand Rapids, when they talk about coming to Grand Rapids and what an important city it is and how many good experiences they have, they also promote the lakeshore. People come here from all over the world to visit the lakeshore. And so because of that, you know, it's very important to us. One of the big things that's happened in the last couple of years that has spurred this kind of development proposal to move forward faster is the fact that, unfortunately, our Michigan legislature loosened the dunes law. They just, you know, depending on who you talk to, they totally exasperated the whole dunes law, but they certainly changed the dune law to make it easier for developers. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but they also, I think, very highly neglected to look at the conservation ethic that this state has been so strongly enmeshed in as far as our economy is concerned. The outdoor economy is a very, very big part of our whole economic engine. And if you pave it over or build it over or make it inaccessible, and that's whether it's hunting grounds or grounds for hiking and walking and fishing and recreating, if you pave it over, it's no longer available. Once it's gone forever. So we're very disappointed in what the Michigan legislature did in loosening the critical dunes law.
You said accessible or making it accessible. That's almost as important as the development question, because a lot of these lands are private lands, and these private owners are saying, hey, this is our property. We don't want people walking around, and yet, you know, we see it closely, you know, like with the Holland situation with Big Red. You know, it's probably so inaccessible in the public side that people just say, heck, I'm not even going to bother going. And these dune lands, if not managed properly, could be the same way.
That's true. Accessibility is one of the principal characters of having an economic system that uses the dune land for the people to come and recreate. And accessibility is critically important, and that's why this area of Lakeshore, especially the Saugatuck Douglas area, has been a place that literally millions and millions of people have visited over the years. I go elsewhere in the United States, and in fact, other places outside of the United States, and they'll say, oh, your Lake Michigan dunes, they are so beautiful. You know, the reputation is there, the magnet to bring more people there all the time, whether they come back for more and more visits or whether they're people who visit for the first time. And it's very important to our local economy as well as to the whole state. You know, tourism for a long time was number two in the state as far as our economic engine, manufacturing, then tourism, and then ag. Ag got some changes made under a former governor to their ability to how they total up that tally. And so now ag, I always say it's ag and tourism are second and third, but the numbers change on a yearly basis. But tourism is a critical part of our economy, and often people forget about how important it is and how much money it generates and regenerates time and time again, because those people will return. Many of them will return with relatives. They will talk about it. Their relatives and friends will return.
So, Patty Burkholz, let me ask you, since I got you on the line, a couple of maybe related questions. One specifically about the dune lands in the Saugatuck area. There was some discussion about the lost city of Singapore, and it's sort of gotten buried over by the dunes over time. And some say, well, you really can't go and look to see where it was because it is now in dune lands. Is that kind of a touchy situation? Because you want to try to bring up some of the history of the area, but unfortunately that history is behind some of the natural things that have happened now. That's sort of a tough line to walk right now.
Well, there's a lot of historical data on Singapore. There have even been some books written about Singapore. So there is, there have been exhibits in the Saugatuck Holland area, particularly in the Saugatuck Douglas area, about Singapore with Singapore artifacts. So there is a lot of history. There's a lot of documentation. In fact, there are several historians who have told me personally, and I've trusted historians, these are not people who have not done their homework, that there still is a Native American burial ground under the sands of the shifting sands of Singapore, but we have not been able to document enough to satisfy the historical requirements to do that. We had hoped that someday we would, but unfortunately we have not been able to do it. But in the meantime, as you hike out there, if you are allowed to hike out there, particularly on the Saugatuck Dunes area of the property where you can look at where Singapore was, there are a lot of areas that can be pointed out that people can look at and, you know, stand there. And if you're a history buff like I am and you read the history, and there are some brochures that are not, you know, long and lengthy historical perspectives, but you read some of the history books about Singapore, you can stand out there and feel like you are taking a step back in time. You can look out at the lake, you can look at the harbor, and you can get the feel of what it was like in those times when Singapore was an alive and thriving small town on the shores of Lake Michigan that provided a lot for our economy and actually was really what some people consider the first development for Saugatuck.
One final thing, Patty Burkholz, and it's another sort of question that might not necessarily be able to be answered now, but it has to be thought of in some quarters. The problem of dredging, and the Saugatuck Douglas area, of course, has been trying to wrestle with the dredging issue, the harbor dredging issue because of size and the PCB question and the like. But now we got that possibly being brought up in Holland because of the fact that the coal shipments will be stopped now and the tonnage will make it a question. And the question is, where do you put all the silt that collects at the bottom? You move them around, and yes, you can put them at the shore, say, in Holland and Grand Haven. But after a while, you know, you're dealing with the shorelines as it is. you got to watch those who are moving, have to watch it, and that again strikes a balance between environment and practical needs. And I would think that you and other people involved in this have to keep a close eye on this dredging situation.
Yes, we do. Obviously, the dredging materials have to be tested and verified that there aren't any harmful elements in them, particularly in the Saugatuck area, where we know that the Kalamazoo River is one of the world's, if not the world's, largest Superfund site, and it's nowhere near being cleaned up yet. Won't be probably in our lifetime, Gary, unfortunately. There's still more work that needs to be done, particularly in our area, but they're starting upriver and moving down. So those soils have to be tested. There are legal requirements that they're tested and verified on a weekly basis if they are dredging, and if there are any materials in there that are considered in any way hazardous, then they have to go to a hazardous landfill. And there is a balance between making sure that our harbors are dredged enough that we can get our boats in and out, and also allow for, you know, recreational traffic, the smaller boats and the kayaks and the rowers and those folks who want to use our waterways now. In fact, we're now talking about a water trail literally from the bottom of Michigan all the way to the top of Michigan, and that work has begun. So there is a balance. It's not always easy to find that balance in between people who don't want to do anything and people who probably want to overdo. And you know me, I've always tried to find that middle balance in there, and I do think it's important that we be able to get our recreational vehicles, meaning our recreational boats, in and out of our small harbors, because they are a big part of our economic engine. And I think we can do that without putting hazardous materials in a place where they are at risk to exposure to the public. And sometimes that means putting them in a hazardous waste landfill, which is a lot more expensive. But unfortunately, we're dealing with I call them the sins of our fathers, because there were no mothers on the boards of directors in those days, but the sins of those who came before us, who just threw all their unwanted spoils of building and, you know, war machinery and chemicals and paper making and everything else out into the nearest waterway. And, you know, it was good. It was a good place for them to put it, they thought at the time. It was very bad for those who came after them.